Continuing Helen Wright's book, Mary Baker Eddy, God's Great Scientist. Disloyal students were sparing no effort in their attempts to discredit Mrs. Eddy as leader and to destroy her holy mission. One night, as she was waiting on God for a message concerning this agonizing development, she took up a sheaf of papers to look through them. She placed the rubber band that bound them on her arm. Later, as she was pacing the floor in prayer, she tossed the rubber band on a chest of drawers. It fell in the shape of a heart. Always able to find sermons in stones and the smile of God in a rose, this shape of a heart held great significance and comfort for her. It symbolized the great heart of God, the ever-presence of ministering love. It told her God had guided her to a right decision and gave her the assurance that his plan would prevail. Greatly comforted, she sat down and wrote the following poem, closing it with a prayer that the barren brood might be awakened to the joy of each finding his own God-appointed place, and that the dove of peace might rest and abide with all. Signs of the Heart. Come to me, joys of heaven. Breathe through the summer air a balm, the long-lost leaven dissolving death, despair. O little heart, to me thou art a sign that never can depart. Come to me, peace on earth. From out life's billowy seas, a wave of welcome birth, the life that lives in thee. O love divine, this heart of thine is all I need to comfort mine. Come when the shadows fall and night grows deeply dark. O barren brood, O call with song of morning lark, and from above, dear heart of love, send us thy white-winged dove. That Mrs. Eddy's prayer was answered is attested by a letter from the first members of the Mother Church, appearing in the same issue of the Christian Science Journal in which the poem appeared. Their letter expressed boundless love, profound gratitude, and their deepest assurance of unflinching desire and purpose to support you in every way possible in this your hour of seeming persecution, but of great blessing. Unquote. Mrs. Eddy's subjective realization of ever-present love in dealing with the problem had lifted her into the realm of spirit's reality and allness where harmony reigned. The letter from her loyal students, The Remnant, published in the journal, was her proof. We just read Mrs. Eddy's statement, "I have no doubt that Jesus was shunned and deemed a bad man at the period of his public labors." We have seen that this harsh lot also befell Mrs. Eddy. The Nadia Schwartz-Williams reminiscences clues us in on the unkind sentiment with which Mrs. Eddy was at times regarded. Nadia Schwartz-Williams, a young Russian girl who spoke no English, was greatly attracted to Mrs. Eddy, her neighbor, when the two met over their back fence. Nadia's aunt, however, had a different view. When told of the budding friendship, she denounced Mrs. Eddy, saying that she was a wicked woman, not right in the head, and Nadia should in the future avoid her. Bancroft and others have testified to the hatred and malice directed toward Mrs. Eddy and of the disquieting rumors that were manufactured and passed around freely when Mrs. Eddy was trying to establish Christian Science in Lynn. These denigrating attacks are continuing today, as Mrs. Eddy foresaw they would when she wrote, and note it is directed to future adherents, quote, "What if the old dragon should send forth a new flood to drown the Christ idea? He can neither drown your voice, nor again sink the world into the deep waters of chaos and old night." Unquote. The science she was teaching held a blessing for each member of the human race, but because it reversed every position of personal sense, of mortal mind, it was, and still is, met with the malignancy of error, in return for love shedding its blessings unsparingly on all. Unquote. Nevertheless, Mrs. Eddy patiently persisted in pouring out to the world her hard-won treasures, revealing to mortals that everything lives only to bless everything else. The Value of Sorrow. The next reference from the first edition deals with recompense and reward. Quote, "Earth has no recompense for such a life. Personal sense can neither give nor receive this reward. The understanding of God is its only recompense that lifts being above mortal discord and gives it immortal harmony." Unquote. Knowing that tear or triumph harms, and that there was a blessing on each cruel blow, Mrs. Eddy met every onslaught with the prayer, "Oh, make me glad for every scalding tear." She waited and loved more for every hate. Undeviatingly, she returned blessing for cursing. In the first issue of the Christian Science Journal, she wrote, "Can breed no poison, though they suck the deadliest juice. So the noble mind, though forced to drain the cup of misery, can yield but generous thoughts and noble deeds." Unquote. On page 261 of the first edition of Science and Health, she wrote, "Every agony of mortal man wafts him onward over the billows until error is finally destroyed and there is no more sea." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy knew it was the set of the sail and not the storms of life that decide the harbor, the goal. It is necessary to have an aim, to set our sail for truth and love. When a mortal doesn't know what harbor he is making for, no wind is the right wind. We must begin to grasp the substance instead of the shadow. By constant self-discipline and allowing God to control, the human self is evangelized. This is the new birth, the travail of error before it is self-destroyed, and man is born of spirit and not matter. Mrs. Eddy recognized the value of experience. The answer to the question, "Canst thou by searching find out God?" is no. It seems to take disappointments and ceaseless woes to turn us to divine love. Thus we learn, quote, "Sorrow only comes to stretch out the places in the heart for joy," unquote. And our gloom has only been the shadow of God's right hand outstretched caressingly, beckoning us to come up higher. Mrs. Eddy could therefore announce triumphantly, quote, "The harmonious and immortal heavens, earth and man, will be revealed and understood when science shall take the place of personal sense and error yield to truth." The sharp experiences of earth and the tender wisdom that takes away idols help to hasten this hour and to destroy the belief of happiness in personal sense. The spiritual understanding of life embraces neither sensuous formation nor conditions of matter. Birth, decay, and death are a personal sense of things, not spirit's idea. Man and the universe are complete and eternal in intelligence, and nothing can exist apart from that. What is the important lesson here? What do we gain by being patient under the rod, under the sharp experiences and tender wisdom that takes away idols? She has already made it clear that, quote, "Understanding life, exempt from mortality, and no sensation or intelligence in the body, is the ultimatum of being, the way, the truth and life that points out the footsteps of science," unquote. With no sensation in the body, the last enemy, human birth, would be terminated. She has also explained that man, originating in God, never fell into sin. The so-called mortal man that is sinning, sick, and dying, resulting from the sex belief, is not the true and real man, but is instead a dream of life and intelligence in matter, dust to dust, nothingness. The belief that there is sensation in the body, that there is life and intelligence in the body, this, she says, was the original sin. it was the lie that must be detected. Quote, to put down the claim of sin, you must detect it. Remove the mask, point out the illusion, and thus get the victory over sin and prove its unreality. Unquote. By demonstration, Mrs. Eddy proved in countless ways that behind the substanceless facade or mask called animal magnetism was never anything but divine love. That's really what she is saying in the reference we come to next in this first edition. And note again what she says the only devil is. Quote, the personal belief that man is a separate mind from God, and that this mind comprehends, feels, and exists, an entity within the cranium, and sins and suffers, ad libitum, is the only personal devil there is, and the one we should begin to cast out. Unquote. We cannot demonstrate the power of God until we discover that our true mind is that power. When we learn in science that all consciousness is mind, why do we look outside of this mind, that is our true mind, our own consciousness, for anything? Because we don't yet fully understand. But Mrs. Eddy makes the encouraging statement that, quote, we shall ultimately prove this science to individual consciousness, unquote. History tells us of various conceptions through which human thought has passed, and shows that with each successive stage and age, there has been more and further dematerialization, until with the advent of the second coming of the Christ, namely the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, there has been a consummate dematerialization of being. This will ultimately lead to complete individual understanding. Once the understanding reigns that we are soul and not body, that we don't even have a matter body, nothing can touch us. When we are spirit, Mrs. Eddy says, spirit will express itself in a spiritual body of ideas. Mrs. Eddy understood and claimed God as her mind, and we must do the same. Must claim God, infinite good, as our mind, as the principle working in our consciousness. Like Jesus, Mrs. Eddy saw this kingdom of heaven within, saw this mind power as a practical, ever-active, living principle to be utilized. She penetrated the veil of illusions and counseled, the way to break the shackles of fear and every false belief is to pour in truth through flood tides of love, since Christian perfection is won on no other basis. She specifies Christian because, quote, Christian science may absorb the attention of sage and philosopher, but the Christian alone can fathom it, unquote. Why can the Christian alone fathom it? Because the true, quote, Christian expresses love, and is the expression of love. And love divine is what it's all about. The healing love that casts out fear and hate. When will we begin to heal more quickly, more spontaneously? Writing to a student, Mrs. Eddy said comfortingly, the healing will grow more easy and be more immediate as you realize that God good is all, and good is love. You must gain love and lose the false sense called love. You must feel love that never faileth. That perfect sense of divine power that makes healing no longer power, but grace. Then you will have the love that casts out fear. And when fear is gone, doubt is gone, and your work is done. Why? Because it was never undone. Richard M. Moss, M.D., opens his book, The I, that is, We, with a healing accomplished by love alone. During this healing, he experienced something that was more real to him than all else. He had no choice thereafter but to honor the new insight and become involved in spiritual healing. He relates that one day, in the emergency room, as he approached, a a frightened and pain-gripped man, with injections of Demerol and Valium. A voice came into his head, unquote. The voice rang within him, quote, "You have nothing to give this man but love," unquote. Handing the syringes to the astonished nurse, he approached this man and embraced him. Almost instantly, the patient went limp in his arms and fell into a deep sleep. 30 minutes later, states Dr. Moss, free of pain, the patient rose and thanked me with tears in his eyes and left the hospital. His pain and hysteria had stopped in seconds with no words and no drugs. Where there had been only hate, belligerence, and fear, there now was awe, respect, and caring in his eyes, unquote. Dr. Moss was obedient to the voice of truth when it rang within him, and that obedience has since given him immense power for service. The human mind versus God's own knowing. What limits understanding? The understanding of Christian Science is severely limited at this period by the misconceptions that the human mind is a healing agent, whereas Mrs. Eddy speaks of her discovery as mind science, mind healing. Science is the knowledge of reality, truth's knowledge. Mrs. Eddy makes it clear that science, capitalized, the science God revealed to her, means that the knowing is God's knowing. This is the tremendous insight that is opening up in this era of human history. This has never been seen before, namely, that the Christ is God's own knowing. Truth's operation in the human consciousness. Writing in 1897, Mrs. Eddy said, "The discovery and founding of Christian Science has cost more than 30 years of unremitting toil and unrest. The founding could only be done through truth's operation in the human consciousness. The founding of Christian Science in the human consciousness takes place as material beliefs are given up and the immortal facts of being are admitted." Speaking of herself, Mrs. Eddy said, "The founder of genuine Christian Science has been all her years in giving it birth." If the founding of Christian Science is giving birth to it, that would mean divine consciousness coming to birth. The founding can only be done in human consciousness. The physical healing of Christian Science results from the operation of divine principle, before which sin and disease lose their reality in human consciousness and disappear. These mighty works are the sign of Emmanuel, or God with us, a divine influence ever present in human consciousness. Spiritual sense lifts human consciousness into eternal truth. Unquote. Still speaking of the founding, she states, "The divine message from God to men speaks to the human consciousness." Unquote. Therefore, let the harmonious and true sense of life and being take possession of human consciousness. Remembering that the heavens and earth to one human consciousness, that consciousness which God bestows, are spiritual, while to another, the unillumined human mind, the vision is material. On page 297, we find that as the human consciousness rises higher, the reality of being is attained. Because she knew that all consciousness is mind, Mrs. Eddy spoke to the whole human consciousness, and all consciousness heard her. As the explanation and founding of her revelation and discovery unfolded, it fulfilled Jesus' prophecy of the Comforter, which would guide into all truth. Mrs. Eddy founded the Christ science in human consciousness by replacing misconceptions with reality, with true conceptions. Misconceptions are due to the fact that we mistakenly translate everything into matter, into something that seems to exist in time and space, and that we can grow old, sicken, and die. Yet all the time, what we are aware of, when rightly viewed, is an image in mind, the immediate object of understanding." Unquote. Her teaching translates matter back into its original language, which is mind, and which gives the spiritual instead of the material signification. The enabling qualities. The discovery of the allness of mind was the result of an earnest, undeviating search for the mind cause of all things over a period of many years, a search that time after time disappointed her, because what she found in her search never crowned the power of mind as the Messiah, which she knew was true. But she prayerfully persevered. There were no circumstances, however unfortunate, from which she was not able to extract some advantage. Each failure was instructive. Each problem was also instructive. And, of course, there were always a lot of them around. She simply made tools of whatever came to hand. She turned every disappointment into a stepping stone to her goal, just as the oyster turns into a pearl the sand which annoys it. A determined, prayerfully patient soul will do more with a rusty wrench than an unmotivated individual will accomplish with all the tools in the machine shop. History has taught us that an individual who becomes a true incarnation of love will wield an influence greater than that of a sceptered monarch. "Love alone is life," Mrs. Eddy wrote. "It is the essence of life itself and brings about the dynamic reunion of the individual with reality, infinite good." Mrs. Eddy realized that the way to acquire the maximum of spiritual power is to understand love to be love. She speaks much of the purity of love and stated that the purer our love, the more lasting it tends to be. Mrs. Eddy's love for mankind was pure. It could therefore endure the suffering and ordeals imposed upon her. It gave her the courage and absolute fearlessness to voice her message to the world in the face of terrible resistance. Quote, "the fixedness of mortal illusions and the human hatred of truth," unquote. In miscellaneous writings, we find her philosophy. To be a great man or woman, to have a name whose odor fills the world with its fragrance, is to bear with patience the buffetings of envy or malice, even while seeking to raise those barren natures to a capacity for a higher life. This will bring us also to look upon a kind, true, and just person, faithful to conscience and honest beyond reproach, as the only suitable fabric out of which to weave an existence fit for earth and heaven." Unquote. She laid her all on the altar with no thought of reward. Impelled by such an unselfish motive, she welcomed the suffering of the flesh. Instead of using spiritual power to banish suffering, she used it to drive her thought higher in the scale of spiritual being as she patiently waited for the spiritual birth. Of this selfless practice, and with profound insight, she wrote, "I enjoy the touch of weakness, pain, and all suffering of the flesh because it compels me to seek the remedy for it and to find happiness apart from the personal senses." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy's history was a holy one. She made truth, the message from God, known. She was, therefore, of necessity, God's messenger. Mrs. Eddy, as a person, did not originate truth or God's message. She sternly warned, "If you think of me as a person, that is animal magnetism. Principle does not work through a person." She quietly reminded the world she could be identified only through her writing. "Those who look for me in person, or elsewhere than in my writings, lose me instead of find me." Christian Science is the self-revelation of truth and love. Mrs. Eddy speaks of herself as a window pane through which truth and love could shine. A window pane is more transparent than a brick wall. And it was this transparency that made her the way-shower to this age. What God was revealing to Mary Baker Eddy, his great scientist, was so revolutionary it could not abide in the same consciousness with the ties of the flesh and their earthly objects of affection. Divine love needed her whole heart and mind for its holy purpose. Science and Health is Mrs. Eddy's autobiography, as she herself made it plain when she said, "Those who look for me in person or elsewhere in my writings lose me instead of find me." Actually, Science and Health, in reality, is everyone's autobiography. Each one's autobiography is spiritual unfoldment. Each one writes his own history. However, each experiences Science and Health only as it is lived. A revealing incident preserved by the Carpenter Foundation relates that a little girl was playing on the porch where Mrs. Eddy was writing. "What are you doing?" asked the child. "I'm working on the life of God," Mrs. Eddy replied. Spiritual insight. Let's take another reference from the first edition and learn how understanding is gained. Quote, "There must be a going out of personal sense and a coming in of the spiritual to understand the science of being, and to give a higher sense of omnipotence whereby to control man and matter. Jesus taught and practiced the science of being, tested the reception it would meet before it was understood, and, notwithstanding the malice that error aimed at truth, fulfilled his sole mission. Persecuted from city to city, he went about doing good, for which he was maligned and stoned. Jesus taught us, principle is God, and God is love. But Pharisee and priest affirmed, God is person that can love and hate. Truth that is felt is hated by the sinner, for it cuts off the right hands, plucks out the eyes, and calls on him to become wise. The belief of God, mind and matter, or a personal deity, never yet made a Christian, and will go down in moral chemicalization that has already begun and will continue until God is admitted soul outside of mortal sense and the only intelligence." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy saw that the basic lie which the carnal mind does not want uncovered is the belief in mortal man as a creator, the ingrained illusion that sex is the creator rather than mind. She says here, "The uncovering of this lie cuts off right hands, plucks out the eyes, and calls on the sinner to become wise. However, she learned through harsh and bitter experience to gently introduce disputed points on minds unprepared for them. But even to the end, she was never one to beat around the bush. She always went straight to the heart of the problem. She looked directly into the mind of God and could see reality, and therefore could see the unreality of evil and error. She had a wonderful spontaneous insight into the allness of God, infinite good, and this revealed the awful unreality and awful deception of evil. We should all claim this extraordinary insight as our birthright." In an earlier session, we spoke of little Vito Magliamelli, age 10, who could compute almost instantly the square root of any large number and other similar extraordinary mathematical feats, and of Benjamin Blythe, who at the age of 6 could almost instantly calculate the number of seconds he had lived, including 2 leap years, and of how young Mozart would suddenly stop, take out his notebook and pencil, saying to his companions, "They are singing in my ears. I must note it down." As we claim the mind of Christ, we can have these sudden insights into the realm of mind, the realm of spiritual reality, which will enable us to emulate the work of Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, and do even greater works. Mrs. Eddy had the faculty of keen reasoning in the spiritual realm. She maintained that God has endowed man with reason, and the dream that matter and error are something must yield to reason and revelation. She said she won her way to absolute conclusions through divine revelation, reason, and demonstration. Reason and revelation were reconciled. Again, she says, reason is the most active human faculty, and that reason, rightly directed, serve to correct the errors of corporeal sense. Mrs. Eddy had a great spiritual insight when she saw that the basic lie is the belief in a mortal mind that creates a so-called mortal man out of nothing, just as a person or object in our sleep dream is created out of nothing, and then calls this mortal something. Error, sin, sickness, disease, death, is the false material sense of mind in matter, she says. This false sense evolves in belief a subjective state of mortal mind, which this same so-called mind names matter, thereby shutting out the true sense of spirit. My discovery that erring, mortal, misnamed mind produces all the organism and action of the mortal body set my thoughts to work in new channels. Unquote. The new channels gave her new spiritual insight. Mrs. Eddy saw that mortal mind and matter were one. In a class, she drove this teaching home with a story about the man who said, "My wife and I are one, and I am that one." Unquote. Man's nature, not his body, deathless. When Mrs. Eddy said in the first edition, "Understanding can grasp even the infinite idea," she was implying that all would sooner or later gain the full understanding of the science of being. In the next reference, observe Mrs. Eddy's complete confidence that we will understand the science of our God-being. Quote, "Our master had realized and demonstrated the science of life when he was found talking with his disciples after the burial, and whom the rabbis had hoped to bury in a sepulchre, today is acknowledged God. And this God and this truth that Jesus taught and proved over 18 centuries ago in days will come to be understood." What would constitute a victory over death? Mrs. Eddy once answered this very question spontaneously when it was put to her by artist Gilman. He wanted to know if victory over death meant to live in this life perpetually. Mrs. Eddy answered, as he recalled, quote, "No, at least not to be visible to mortals to much extent. We overcome death when we fully overcome material sense, and then it is not able to behold us because spirit is not appreciable to matter." Unquote. To this Gilman answered, "I suppose in that state of advancement we shall still have a body that will be just as real to us as this body." "Not in a finite personal way," she said. Gilman responded that he could not separate in his thought the idea of his identity from its embodiment in some form. "That is true," she said. "Your identity will have its embodiment, but it will not be finite in form and outline like this personal body. I think of our existence in that state more as we think of one who, in some crisis, rises to vigorous, noble action that is characteristic of that one's nature. We do not think of a person's body at such times, but of the force of mind and of spiritual import." Unquote. It is certain that life will be understood in its perpetual newness and inspiration when the structure of our consciousness becomes one with the structure of reality, and we learn that love alone is life. Under the marginal heading, "Eternity of the Christ," Mrs. Eddy refers to Revelation 1 and explains, "The Revelator represents the Son of Man as saying, 'I am the first and the last. I am he that liveth and was dead, not understood. And behold, I am alive for evermore. Science has explained me.'" Our next two references from the first edition are on this subject. Quote, "Jesus proved for time and eternity that death is but a belief of personal sense, because life is spirit, alias God, and God the immortality and soul of man." People's opinions of Jesus were the very opposite of the man, and mark you wisely what will be said today of the science he taught and its followers, and see if there be no resemblance between the reception it received in the past and that accorded it at present. We have few demonstrators today, in part even, of the great truth taught by Jesus. But we hesitate not to say it is the privilege and possibility of all Christians to follow his example and what they claim to do. But they must keep his first commandment, to heal the sick, as proof they understand this example and the principle that healed. Advanced thinkers give us support. How does she end the second chapter, Imposition and Demonstration? With a reasoned, urgent appeal for faith in the truth of being and steadfast allegiance to the science which shows us reality. Quote, "When the science of being's purity confronts the impurity of sense, and humanitarianism lifts a voice above sectarianism, blows will fall liberally on science. Its true followers will be traduced and persecuted, and imposition and malice will smite error's destroyer. Doctrines in general will trample on it, inasmuch as it heals the sick without drugs, and must ultimately destroy sickness when their occupation will be gone. But shall we serve the old masters because truth has enemies and disturbs the tranquility of error? Wisdom has given us more foresight than this. To the advanced thinkers perceiving the scope and tendency of truth, we may look for support, while others will say to the truth Jesus taught, crucify him, that equated human birth with the great red dragon. The highest standpoint of being is its science, but opinions, doctrines, and beliefs afford no demonstrable principle to reach it and enable man to work out his own salvation. 'Tis truth, the principle of man, that does this." Unquote. Then she asks, "But is there not a smoother and broader path to harmony or heaven? And cannot Christianity be coupled with worldly peace and prosperity?" She answers this query,